From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
I have changed my mind. I've decided to go ahead and vote for Director Pompeo because he's assured me that he's learned the lesson. Now, time will tell if those assurances are true or not, and I won't say that I can say with absolute certainty I know what his opinions will be and how they will come out over time, but I do take him at his word that he does and has incorporated the idea that the Iraq War was a mistake. And I think that is a step forward, particularly for our side to have anybody say that, because I'm sure if we had a vote on my side, I would probably lose that vote in the committee even. But I do think that the country understands that the Afghan war has gone on for 18 years and they're ready for some other ideas. I hope that they'll let Trump be Trump and that Pompeo will be a constructive influence and not a destructive one. But from what I've been told and listened to with the director, I think that he is open and understands that his job is that the president is his boss and will listen. And I hope that all of us, the country, really will rethink how many wars we need to be involved in and whether they're constructive or destructive.
A long answer, but Senator Rand Paul, yes, has changed his mind. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And late Monday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved the confirmation of Mike Pompeo to be the next Secretary of State. And as we heard, Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, opted to support the CIA director. We'll talk with Matthew Hyman, visiting fellow at the National Security Institute. And Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council, will discuss the relationship between national security and religious freedom. What should Pompeo's first steps be? And in California, if a bill passes there in the Senate and is signed into law, it would negatively impact Christian counselors, bookstores, church conferences, as well as medical and health professionals attempting to counsel individuals out of homosexual lifestyle. Could even the Bible be banned, given its verses that talk about sexual sin? We'll talk with Jonathan Keller, CEO of California Family Council. And two dads have come together to create an organization to help fathers and sons connect in meaningful ways. Co-founder of Champion Tribes, Nick Sailors, will join us to discuss the importance of father-son relationships. You don't want to miss that one. Really looking forward to talking with Nick on that. Well, all of this great content can be found at TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, and you can follow me, R. Jones Reports, at R. Jones Reports. Well, after several conversations with President Trump, Senator Rand Paul changed his vote from no to yes, paving the way for Mike Pompeo to be the next Secretary of State. Three Democratic senators also voted in favor of the CIA director. With us now is Matthew Hyman, visiting fellow at the National Security Institute at George Mason University. Matthew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Ross. Great to be on the program.
Well, I think you probably heard Senator Rand Paul's long answer there. Can you dissect that for us? Is just hyperbole? Is he melodramatic, or is it? Did he really have a change of heart?
Well, I'd like to give the senator the benefit of the doubt and suggest that he had a change of heart. I think also there was probably a number of conversations in the background between folks at the White House and Senator Paul. Sometimes the carrot is used to incentivize mm-hmm. legislators to vote with the White House. Sometimes the stick is threatened if they don't. I also suspect Senator Paul gave some thought to the fact that he had voted to confirm Democratic nominees such as Kerry to be Secretary of State, and it would have been awfully awkward to go back home and talk to his constituents to explain why he wouldn't support Director Pompeo, but he did support Senator Kerry, then at the time Senator Kerry. So probably a combination of factors ultimately pushed him to change his mind.
And you know, Matthew, as I was preparing for our talk, I went back and did some research to look into exactly what you just said, that he voted, I think, every President Obama appointee without pause, saying every president has a right to his cabinet as he sees fit. I found that quote. So you're exactly right.
Yeah, and I think that's been the tradition in the Senate, particularly when we talk about these national security posts. So you're talking about typically Director of CIA, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense. Those are the positions that historically have gotten the highest level of bipartisan support. And in your research, you probably found that Secretary or that then Senator Kerry received 90 plus votes. Senator Hillary Clinton received 90 plus votes, and they both had, I believe, unanimous or near unanimous votes coming out of the Foreign Relations Committee. So even if we go back to the George W. Bush administration, when Condoleezza Rice was nominated for Secretary of State, I believe her vote on the floor carried 85 to 13, and that was in the midst of the Iraq War, which was obviously controversial. And I think that's because the Senate historically has always thought, in these national security posts, we should, our primary criteria should be, is this person qualified? Do they have the qualifications necessary to do the job? Not, do they agree with me on every policy point? Because if that was the case, these votes would be much more divided. And unfortunately, it appears we've reached a point where even these national security posts are becoming sort of partisan footballs. And I think that's why we see all the acrimony on the Hill over the Pompeo nomination.
And this one in particular has been difficult for me to watch. And during my years in Kansas, I got to know Mike very well over a number of years and got to see him work across the state there, got to see him build a campaign and eventually run for Congress and win that election. And I know his resume through and through, and he brings a resume like not too many people can to the table, doesn't he?
He absolutely does. I mean, again, if the Senate was to take what is the traditional path in assessing a nominee, you'd say, okay, what are the credentials that this person possesses to serve in this role? And if you go through Mike Pompeo's careers, you know it well. The guy was a West Point grad. He was a captain in the U.S. Army. He's a Harvard Law grad. He was a congressman from Kansas. He served on the House Intelligence Committee, then obviously most recently was appointed director of the CIA and was confirmed by the Senate. And so all of those credentials and accolades in his career, coupled with the fact that there's never been a hint of scandal or ethical impropriety, you would say this is a person that's fully qualified to be our next Secretary of State. Unfortunately, the partisan nature of what's going on in the Hill, and I think really the Democrats' absolute dislike for the president has spilled over into this nomination process, and I think that's why we are where we are today.
And boy, isn't that true. The partisanship is just so thick. And does this serve as a reminder how tough it could be to replace Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein in the event that Trump would make a change there?
Well, I think that's right. I think if I'm in the White House and I'm advising the president and I'm thinking about open senior roles in the federal government, I've got to look at it through the lens, whether we're talking about the Deputy Attorney General or any other post that becomes open, Secretary for Veterans Affairs. I've got to look at it through the lens of how many Republicans do I have? How many Democrats can I peel off if I need them? Because you're not going to get votes, generally speaking, at least in the current state, of 80 or 90 votes plus, even for a highly qualified candidate such as Director Pompeo. That's certainly been the case for years now with Supreme Court nominees, but now we're seeing it spill over into these what I'd call more traditional cabinet posts that just haven't had this kind of partisanship, but it does change your calculus.
Now, Matthew, as you probably know, the president of France is here, big state dinner, rolling out the red carpet, and they're talking this nuclear agreement with Iran. Do you think the timing is important for President Trump's decision on that in relation to North Korea?
I suspect that the White House views these as two separate events, and I don't think they link them in any significant way, other than the obvious linkage of you've got two hot items that you're trying to manage at the same time, and it divides your attention. But obviously, President Macron's visit here is an important one. He appears to be the European leader that, on at least a personal level, President Trump gets along with the best. And I know President Macron would like to see the U.S. stay in the Iran deal. And that's where the horse trading is going to have to take place between Trump and Macron to figure out, is there a place where both countries can agree? And maybe it's the U.S. staying in the deal or abandoning the deal, and maybe it's the Europeans kind of moving more towards the U.S. position of agreeing to additional sanctions. You know, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I think it's a good reminder of the importance of having allied relationships, even when we don't agree with our allies all the time. They can be very important for us, as we saw with the strikes in Syria when we were joined by the UK and France in those strikes. It gives greater legitimacy to our actions. It's certainly good to have that alignment around the world, especially when you're dealing with tough adversaries like Iran and Russia, to know that the West is really aligned and there's certain core principles we agree on. It's pretty powerful.
Now, back to Pompeo, you think he's going to get the votes for confirmation? It sure looks like it.
I do. I think he's going to get the votes for confirmation. I think he'll have a handful of Democrats support him. As you know, probably from looking at the papers, Senator Heidi Heitkamp has come out in favor of him, along with Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia. I suspect he'll pick up maybe two or three more Democrats, particularly those that are in Trump red states and maybe facing tough reelection battles. So, you know, I'd be speculating, but he'll probably be confirmed, and I would guess he'll get 55 to 57 Senate votes in the process.
Well, hopefully that'll happen sooner than later, because there are some pretty serious things on the world stage that needs our attention and needs somebody at that post.
Absolutely. This is certainly not a time for to be short-staffed when it comes to the national security team. And I expect that vote to happen this week. And the sooner he gets behind his desk, the better off the country is, I think.
Now, we're almost out of time. You've been tracking U.S. and U.K. Hacking devices being hacked, Russian hackers, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Interesting report last week where the U.S. and the U.K. said that Russia was engaged in this behavior. It's consistent with the behavior of Russia throughout. You know, we saw a couple of years ago where Russia used cyber means to shut the power off in Kiev, which is the capital city. And so it's something that the U.S. government needs to take very seriously, and it's something that each of us as individuals need to take seriously. And there are some small steps we can all take to mitigate the risk of our own Internet of Things devices being hacked. One of the most simple ones is when you bring that Alexa speaker home or whatever it is you're attaching to your home Wi-Fi system, make sure that you change that default password, because that's the first thing hackers will go after. And it takes a couple of minutes.
Good advice.
It's important.
Matthew, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Very insightful. We appreciate you being on the show. We'll have to have you back.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Thank you, Matthew Hyman, visiting fellow at the National Security Institute at George Mason University. Up next, our own Travis Weber. He'll be here to discuss the connection between national security and religious freedom. I'm Rush Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hey, I'm back. I brought food. What's the score?
98%.
What?
My congressman got a 98% on the Family Research Council Action scorecard.
You are such a nerd.
Family Research Council Action created a new scorecard to help others understand how well their member of Congress is doing on the things that are important to you. Like how your representatives voted on taxpayer funding for abortion, repealing and replacing Obamacare, the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and other important legislation relating to faith, family, and freedom.
Really? I barely know my congressman. Let me look this up. How do I get the info on this?
Go to frcaction.org/scorecard. Once you find out how your representative voted on these issues, you should let them know your thoughts and keep them accountable. Whoa, you're typing it all wrong. It's frcaction.org/scorecard.
Okay, I got it now. I'll keep an eye for my representatives for any foul balls.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique. Not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it? It's not. Social emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Well, it's Tuesday. You've tuned in to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony's in Israel, leading a big group there. And Lord willing, he'll be here tomorrow and Wednesday with some great guests on Israel-related topics. Very interesting. It's kind of fun the other day to hear Tony, or yesterday, doing the show on a bus. And I've been on those roads where he is throughout Judea and Samaria, so... Good radio. Makes for great radio. Well, with Mike Pompeo now likely headed for confirmation as the next Secretary of State, what does the national security and the implications for religious freedom have to do with one another? Joining us now is Travis Weber. He's the director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much.
Well, I know you get knee-deep in these issues, and you know them well. How is the issue of national security and religious freedom linked?
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at the world stage and kind of look at where religious freedom is protected, where it's not protected, in recent history, you know, we're looking at the state of play at the end of the 20th century, overwhelmingly, the nations which are security threats to the United States violate religious freedom within their borders. And overwhelmingly, the nations which are not security threats to the United States protect religious freedom within their borders. This is a clear pattern, and as such, it should be in the interest of anyone charged with this protecting the strategic long-term interest of the United States engaged in our foreign policy, it should be something that they would want to pay attention to. You know, observing this pattern is step one. Step two is then what do we make of it? How do we act on it to protect religious freedom around the world and cultivate that, which at the same time, in the long term, will ultimately protect the national security of the United States.
Now, what do you think Mike Pompeo's first step should be in this space?
Well, you know, I think in this space, I mean, he's going to have a lot on his plate, but in this space specifically, you know, I think we need to start with a change of mindset. Often, religious freedom has been looked at as a humanitarian issue of an imprisoned person here, an imprisoned person there, somebody asking for a pastor to be released, and then we kind of, clap our rubber hands together and kind of, you know, wash them clean of any further attention on the issue. And that's not the way we should approach it. We should approach it recognizing what I just mentioned about this correlation worldwide. So when we have this mental shift, it results in all of our foreign policy professionals keeping religious freedom in mind as they deal with all the issues we face, or many of the issues we face worldwide. And we need to start by doing what we can to see that this framework shift, this philosophical shift takes place in how we talk about foreign policy, in the training we give our diplomats, in our all of our discussions with other nations, with other diplomats, with in the international organizations arena, having a focus with this recognition of the connection between the two in the back of our minds, which will take us away from the one-off approach. I think this is step one, because this is how we get people thinking and focusing on the issue, and this will ultimately result in it being protected and cultivated in a number of different areas.
And you know, Mike is a Army veteran. He's a former congressman. I know him well from my years in Kansas. I can imagine he will engage this issue as it relates to national security very differently than his predecessor in Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, he in his worldview, he understands religion. I mean, he is religious. He understands it. And this enables someone to accurately and professionally deal with the very religious world in which we live. You know, it's one thing when you have people who don't understand it, and this has often been the case in our recent history in the foreign policy professionals world, in that those elite circles, religion is looked at as sort of a nuisance, something that's cause of problems, and it's just not dealt with well, whether the issue is religious freedom or the role of religion in society. And even the Center for Security, CSIS, the think tank, which is pretty middle of the road as far as think tanks go in the foreign policy world, put out a report called Mixed Blessings in 2006, in which that organization said that we've failed to accurately and properly engage religion in the foreign policy space. So I think Mike Pompeo is equipped to do that, and because of his understanding of religion. And we live in a religious world. The Pew Research shows this is only increasing. We shouldn't be running the other way. We need to run towards religion and the promotion of religious freedom worldwide.
Now, Travis, some of our listeners may not know, but FRC actually submitted a letter to Senator McConnell, religious leaders all over the world with major organizations saying this is an important issue. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's true. And we've made some of these points in that letter and argued that Mike Pompeo is someone who gets this and will implement it as Secretary of State. You know, some of these points we also made in our publication on the issue, and folks, if they want to know more about this, can go read that on our website, frc.org/national security. It points out and highlights a lot of the research connecting national security and religious freedom.
And you know, Travis, I was reading an interesting factoid that there's not a single nation in the world that both respects religious freedom and poses a security threat to the U.S.
Yeah, and this is kind of the summary point, you know, that I of the issues I was addressing here at the beginning of the show today, and this is, you know, this is a point that's been recognized by scholars. Professor William Inboden down in Texas he's a former State Department professional, has been in the field, studied the issue. He's the one who kind of looked at a lot of this and recognized this pattern, this correlation, and this is important because it's a clear fact, and I think foreign policy professionals would do well to take heed of it.
Well, Travis, thank you so much. We're up against the wall here. Appreciate your time for joining us here today. Very insightful.
Thanks very much.
All right. That was Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council. Well, coming up next, could Bibles and Christian literature be banned in California? Yeah, it's possible. When we return, Jonathan Keller, CEO of California Family Council, will be here to tell us how. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendars for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Mike Huckabee, Paul Ryan, Ben Carson, Steve Scalise, Kellyanne Conway, Kirk Cameron, Laura Ingraham, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levine. On September 21st to 23rd, stand with Values Voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the special early bird price, but act fast. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony's in Israel, the Holy Land, one of my favorite spots on the planet. Well, one of the spots on the U.S. map is certainly doing some interesting things. The California Assembly approved a bill last week that tells churches and other religious organizations with traditional beliefs about gender and sexual orientation that advocating for their views could get them sued. The pro-LGBTQ bill, AB 2943, is quickly making its way through the California State Assembly after it was approved on the floor last week. The bill now goes to the State Senate for a vote. With us now is Jonathan Keller, CEO of California Family Council. Jonathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, always great to be with you and your listeners. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to have you on. Wow, what an issue. Let me see if I get this right. AB 2943 declares, quote, advertising, offering to engage in or engaging in sexual orientation change efforts with an individual is illegal under the state's consumer fraud law. Is that really accurate?
That's basically it. It's almost so unbelievable when you first hear it. You've got to think there has to be more to it than this. But what's really at issue here is the state of California is trying to use the coercive power of government, and in this case, the consumer protection laws, as a way of saying that certain speech they don't like, especially religious speech that they don't like, is actually fraudulent. And really, it actually is saying that the gospel itself, those parts of the gospel that say people can change, people don't have to live according to their sexual instincts and their sexual temptations. It's saying that that message of hope and transformation is actually fraudulent.
Wow. Now, Jonathan, some are saying this is just hype about the Bible being banned and whatnot. But isn't this really a logical outgrowth of this bill?
Yeah, you know, I want to be very clear here, because one thing that occasionally happens whenever we're talking about this bill or other legislation, I think it's important that we state the facts. And It is true. Some of our critics on the left are saying, look, there's nothing in this statute that says it would ban the Bible. But that's true. That is technically true. The word Bible never appears in the statute. But the way that the language is written, it's so vague and so broad that any type of discussion about changing your sexual behaviors, not just changing your sexual identity or your sexual attractions, but even if someone is struggling with their sexual identity, even if someone is feeling attracted to members of the same sex, but they're a committed Christian and they say, I don't want to act on these feelings. I want to serve the Lord. I want to be a faithful Christian. I want to be celibate. You know, maybe it means that for whatever reason, I'm not going to get married, but I'm also going to commit my life to a life of holiness and chastity. Buying a book that applies the teachings of Scripture and tells you how to live out your life as a celibate and holy individual, that could actually be illegal under this book, I mean, under this law. Mm-hmm. It would go on to say, in addition, in the state of California, if you wanted to go see a Christian counselor, you wanted to see a pastor, you wanted to set up a series of counseling sessions with him or her and say, I know that pastors, you can't do this for free. Maybe you're in a small church, but they're going to give you a deal. Maybe it's only $20 a session to be able to go to a licensed Christian counselor. That would be illegal. The Christian counselor could not take any payment or any compensation for their professional counseling if you wanted help dealing with same-sex attraction.
You know, the Bible just seems to be so under attack. GQ magazine recently said, oh, the Bible's not really that big a book. I don't quite understand why it's the number one best-selling book. And now out here in California, I mean, the whole Christian faith is rooted in heart change. Are there some in the California legislature that know that this bill does what it does but simply don't care?
Well, I hate to say it, but that is absolutely the case. It would be one thing if you could plead ignorance, and if some of these legislators, you know, it'd be bad enough if you're elected to be a legislator in the state's or the nation's most populous state. You're supposed to be making policy for 38 million Californians, and yet you're ignorant. But in this case, some of these people don't actually care. There's a shocking video on our website, californiafamily.org, where a California State Assembly member who actually used to be with the Department of Justice in California stands up and on the floor of the assembly says, the people of religious faith need to evolve with the times. Well, I'm sorry, Assembly Member Muratafashi, but the times need to realize
that
Christianity and the Bible has been here long before the state of California, and it will be here long after.
Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that. So now what? Is there any chance of getting this repealed, or are the numbers just not in favor for that?
Well, there is a bit of good news. This has passed so far out of the California State Assembly, but we have a bicameral legislature like most states in the union, and now this has to go on to our state Senate. So we urge everybody listening, please go on to our website. We set up a special website just on this issue. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. It's just the title of the bill, AB 2943, AB like assembly bill,
right.
AB2943.com.
All right.
And they can sign their name to a petition. They can share that information with people in California, and they can help spread the word about how to stop this bill.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for coming on the show and getting us up to date. We will certainly join in supporting your efforts there. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless you. Jonathan Keller, CEO of California Family Council. Well, coming up next, how important are father-son relationships? Nick Salyers, co-founder of Champion Tribes and Act Like a Champion today, is going to be here. We're going to have a good conversation. This topic is particularly important to me. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org.
Hey, I'm back. I brought food. What's the score?
98%.
What?
My congressman got a 98% on the Family Research Council Action scorecard.
You are such a nerd.
Family Research Council Action created a new scorecard to help others understand how well their member of Congress is doing on the things that are important to you. Like how your representatives voted on taxpayer funding for abortion, repealing and replacing Obamacare, the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and other important legislation relating to faith, family, and freedom.
Really? I barely know my congressman. Let me look this up. How do I get the info on this?
Go to frcaction.org/scorecard. Once you find out how your representative voted on these issues, you should let them know your thoughts and keep them accountable. Whoa, you're typing it all wrong. It's frcaction.org/scorecard.
Okay, I got it now. I'll keep an eye out for my representatives for any foul balls.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Well, we're rounding the corner going towards home. Glad you're tuning in today. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Well, in the 11 to 14 year age window, sons are in a pivotal developmental stage of life. And as sons, your son begins forming his identity through his transition from a boy to a young adolescent man, the most significant place he's going to look to is for affirmation is you, Dad, the father. With us now is Nick Salyers. He's co-founder of Champion Tribes. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Russ.
Really been looking forward to our segment here today to talk. You're a graduate of the University of Georgia. You competed there as a Division I athlete on the swim team. I was particularly attracted to that. I was a diver in the day back in the
All
many
right.
many days ago. We were those odd folks on the swim team. You know? During your senior year, you qualified for the U.S. Olympic swimming trials and the 100-meter backstroke. So that's all very cool and part of your history. How did you pivot into father-son relationships and providing resources?
Yeah. So, it's a little bit of a long story, and I would say it actually started when I was 6 years old. Mm. And that was when my dad got invited to a neighborhood friend's their son's bar mitzvah, and he went to that and was just blown away by just the beauty and power of that ceremony. Mm-hmm. And he said at one point, I wasn't actually there, but he said at one point that he was just sitting in the back weeping when the father read this letter that he had written to his son about what he saw in him and what he wanted for his life. And he kind of told my mom on the way home from the bar mitzvah that, man, when Nick turns 13, I want to do something like that for him. And he started asking this question of, why is it that Christianity doesn't have something like that? And we kind of started calling it the missing milestone. And so sure enough, when I turned 13, or really 12, my dad decided to kind of spend that next year of my life just really intentionally pouring into my life and showing me what it looked like to be a man from his perspective and God's perspective. And so that was kind of the start of what we now call Champion Tribes. And that just had such a big impact on my life that that really seeing the affirmation that I got from my dad and how that affected my life. When I got to college, I really saw how much that made a difference. And I had friends that received the affirmation of their father, and I had friends that didn't receive the affirmation of their father, and you saw that play out in their life mm-hmm. and the way that they thought and their actions. And so it really just, God started developing in me a heart to help fathers invest in their sons' lives during that crucial period of time.
Wow, that's very interesting because, you're absolutely right. In some of those Jewish traditions of bar mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs, they highlight these really important windows of time in adolescence and going into adulthood, and they celebrate those things. And you really don't see that in the Christian faith so much. And, Nick, this topic is so important to me. My mom divorced when I was 3 years old. I don't have any memory of my father, and she never allowed me to have a relationship with my father. It was tragic. And and later in my life, when my mom remarried and then she divorced again after 20-some years, and I had an obituary column that my grandmother had given me my father's father's funeral. And that was back in a time where you didn't have Google. You didn't get on Bing or Yahoo or Google and go find people. You literally had to get on the phone and call 411 or whatnot. Well, long, long story short, I went on a journey to find my dad, and I didn't know if he was still alive. I didn't know where he was. And after months and months of searching, I finally found my father in Marysville, Ohio. And that was when I was 30 years old. And that's been 28 years ago. And we have since developed a relationship. And I've been grateful to find him, because there are so many things about me that are connected to him. And I'm sure you hear these kind of stories all the time, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And there's a quote that my dad read in a book called The Blessing. And I think it kind of captured what really catalyzed this whole idea. And it said, if a young man fails to receive the blessing of his father, he'll spend the rest of his life looking for it in all the wrong places. Mm-hmm. And we see that play out, with our Heavenly Father and seeking that affirmation and him to come fill our hearts. But we also seek that from our earthly father. And the father's words just have such power and meaning in a young man's life.
Right. So what kind of things does Champion Tribes do to help fathers develop these kind of relationships with their sons?
Yeah. So kind of our real goal is to inspire, catalyze, and equip dads to action in their son's life. And what we've done is we've kind of taken that experience that me and my dad went through when I was 13, and we've tried to come up with a way to equip any dad, and especially busy dads, to do the same thing and kind of do a rite of passage experience in their son's life. And so what that looks like is we have a physical kit in a digital platform, and we kind of give dads across the country tools to form what we call a tribe. And a tribe is a pretty simple idea. It's just 3 to 8 pairs of fathers and sons, and those sons will spend 6 months to a year, depending on how long they want to stretch it out, going through the 12 values of Champion Tribes. And so they'll gather together maybe once a month and really dig deep into 12 specific values that we picked out that we think every man should be learning about from his father and should be thinking about as he is in that, transition period from boyhood to manhood.
Now, tell me about the power of compliments. That's one of the things I was reading about on your website.
Yeah. So we really believe that that words have power. And so that's a really easy way for dads to just start speaking life into their children is a lot of times dads give generic compliments, but we're, you know, equipping them to give more specific compliments. And that starts by knowing your son. And that's really what Champion Tribes empowers dads to do is it gives them a context for conversation. And it gives them a context to help grow their relationship with their son and build that relationship. And so that's the real outcome is we provide this digital platform with all of this content and this physical kit that helps you, the dad, create the right context for deep, meaningful conversation and ultimately an opportunity to give your son your blessing. Which is such a powerful and crucial thing that he's looking for and seeking from you, even if he doesn't know how to articulate that to you.
So what are some of the tools that are available that fathers can use, and how do you do it without it looking like you're using a program? Do you know what I mean with your kid?
Yeah. So we definitely want the dads to be the heroes in this situation. So that's how we think through everything. And so, yeah, we provide some physical items, but really our goal is to make you the hero to your son. And so that's what the kit does is, kind of every son feels loved in different ways. And some sons feel loved, through gifts and some through physical affection and some through words of affirmation and others acts of service. And so a little bit of the kit is just that idea is we're going to help you walk through each of those, you know, the five love languages with your son throughout this program.
Right.
And we just want you to feel totally equipped to build your relationship with your son and invest in it. And so we actually have two products that we do this with. One is Champion Tribes, which is really specifically for, you know, kind of 11 to 14 year old sons and their dads. But then we also have another one that's more broad and general, that it's for a father that has a son or a daughter, kind of 6 to 15 age wise. And that one is called the EDM kit, and it really helps dads dig into the everyday milestone.
Right.
So there's this big milestone at 13 that we think every father should be paying attention to and in tune with in their children's lives. But there's also ways to engage every single week and not have to wait until, you know, your son is 12 to start engaging. And so that's really our heart is just to make it really easy for busy dads to start engaging in their children's lives through conversation and through creating the right context to get beyond the everyday and the mundane.
Well, what a great resource because, you know, Nick, there's no manual for this job.
That's right.
There isn't. I mean, well, there is, and it's called the Bible. But sometimes you're in these moments and it's like, what in the world do I do with this? Because a lot of dads just have a hard time connecting and their sons want that connection, but they don't know how to ask for it. So exactly. There's a lot of pitfalls, aren't there?
Yeah. And that's what we've, you know, realized in talking with a lot of dads is that a lot of dads didn't get this from their dad.
No.
And so, you know, that's another area where you know, they didn't have instruction. They don't know what to look for. And so we're trying to, you know, help them provide some of that, but also really connect them with other dads who are going through the same thing. And that community is also so important to develop for you and for your son or daughter.
So how does a dad get this going? How does the fathers that are listening right now, what's the next step for them if they want to engage with Champion Tribes?
Yeah, so the best thing for them to do would be to go to www.championtribes.com, and from there they can learn all about the program and the 12 values that we focus on throughout the program. And there's also a link out to, if you're interested in the EDM kit, on that website. But that's the best thing for them to do is go to that website and learn more.
And then what do they do? Just kind of start from there? Do you gradually go in? There's a dad out there that's really struggling, so I'm trying to find out, you know, what can he do?
Yeah, so I would start thinking, if you do have a son that's in middle school, I would start thinking about the other dads who you might want to go through this with. Mm-hmm. We highly encourage doing it in a tribe because it makes a big, big difference in terms of building that context and having those conversations. And so I would start talking to other dads and see if any of them would be interested in doing the same. And then once you start to have a tribe forming, go ahead and buy the kit, and that'll give you access to the digital content as well. And then you can start going through the 12 sessions.
And I would imagine, Nick, that if there's behaviors that aren't so desirable in your son, you might want to start looking closer to home and see what you can do to change your own behavior that might bring out the more desirable behavior.
Definitely. And I think that is, you know, where it starts is modeling, you know, what it looks like to be a man to your son. But I do think that there's a quote that we've kind of developed through seeing this happen is we want sons living from their father's affirmation, not for it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes what you see playing out in those moments is if they're living from a place of affirmation, it's totally different, their behaviors and actions, if they're living from your affirmation as opposed to living for it. And so that's our heart and what we want to see happen in father-son relationships.
And our culture these days doesn't really make it easier for a dad to be a dad and a son to be a son because there's so many mixed messages, and I'm sure you're battling that as well in what you do.
Definitely, yeah. And I would say that it's specifically a son thing as well. I ran across a statistic last week that said of the 70% of college students that reported receiving a blessing from their parents, only 8% of those were men. And so that's really something that we want to see change is that our young men aren't getting this. And so we want to equip dads to give a blessing to their son, but also create the right context for the son to receive it. Because it really can change the world if we let it and start leaning into this idea.
Well, Nick Salyers, wow. I applaud you. And there are people all across the country listening to this that applaud you. We're out of time. Champion Tribes. We'll be in touch, Nick. Let's stay in touch. Please keep us informed on what you're doing. This is so desperately needed in our time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me, Russ.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much. And folks, go to championtribes.com and check it out. Fathers and sons, we need help. We need help and direction, and here's a good place to go. Well, I leave you with this. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. I'm Russ Jones. You've been listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.